Welcome everybody, this is the Office 365 Developer Patterns and Practices weekly webcast, and this time we're going to talk about the BMP provisioning engine, which we actually have covered in quite a few videos already. But this time we're going to have a look on one of the reference solutions what we have in the BMP solution guidance or package, which has been implemented using AngularJS from a UI perspective, and there's some other goodies inside of this reference solution, which is absolutely available for you to use. With me in this call is Frank Maresco and Prime Micheli, and the guys who have been controlling and initially created the solution. And obviously there has been numerous other community contributors on the creation of the solution as well. But I'll, let's start with an introduction. So Frank, let's start from you.
Hi guys. My name is Frank Maresco. I'm a senior service engineer in SharePoint Online and OneDrive team. And I am one of the core members of the Patterns and Practices team.
And the second person on the call also is Brian Micheli.
Yeah, hi folks. Brian Micheli. I'm a principal consultant with Microsoft Services in the U.S. And I've been working on the PMP stuff for a while and working on this solution.
Thanks, and my name is Vesa Juvonen. I didn't actually do an introduction of myself. So my name is Vesa Juvonen. I'm a senior program manager in Microsoft as well. And one of the things that I wanted to quickly start before we really deep dive on the solution, this is actually coming from a real customer engagements. Right, guys?
Correct, yeah. Correct. This solution has been developed based on a lot of feedback from many of our customers. They have a lot of the similar, same requirements, and they do have existing full trust code solutions to do their provisioning, and they are looking to leverage the PNP sample and extend it for their organization.
Absolutely makes sense. And obviously within the PMP, what we want to do is rather than everybody across the world will build their own solutions, which are completely isolated, we would be able to create a community created one solution, which we're able to then evolve together with the community. But I'll let the guys actually do the presentation, and I'm going to interrupt and ask stupid questions like I usually do with these videos. So take it away.
Go ahead, Brian. as far as the user interface, it's a sample, it's a reference implementation. Like I mentioned, it was basically built off of a lot of our customer requirements. They wanted a modern UI. They wanted something simple to make changes and edit. They didn't want to go through a big process, and we had a lot of requests for something that was AngularJS based. So this is where this kind of came from, and a lot of the features in it are, again, common features that are found across most of our customers' full trust code solutions. The user interface is in the common library, like it says in the slide. It basically wraps our PNP core provisioning engine. The user interface basically uses this common library, which is the wrapper to the engine.
And then from a hybrid scenario, what we mean by this is if you're in SharePoint Online today, some customers also have SharePoint on-premises, and they want a common solution that would work across multiple infrastructures and topologies. So we bring in the capabilities to provision sites in SharePoint Online, as well as SharePoint on-premises builds. Now, the one thing, though, about this solution is that it is built on the low trust model. So if you are in SharePoint on-premises, you would have to set up that ACS trust with Azure Active Directory to leverage the OAuth tokens from ACS. You can do high trust with some modifications, but then this gets a little bit complicated because in SharePoint Online, we don't really support that high trust model. So I think it would be a best practice or recommendation to leverage the low trust model so you don't have to manage these certificates.
And that's actually a good idea, and I'll write it down on my to-do list, because that's actually a great topic for a weekly webcast, to explain what does the low trust mean for on-premises and how to set it up, and why is it actually more flexible than the high trust. But let's come back on this slide later, so feel free, guys.
Yeah. And one of the other things, too, right, is it is highly configurable. What we mean by highly configurable is you can change the UX components, you can change the metadata components of the solution. You can also, if you download the Git package, what you'll notice is that it's pointing and leveraging a SharePoint list for all of its artifacts. That's how the actual code is actually determining, where to store, for example, that site request list. We'll talk a little bit more about that configuration in later slides. The other thing, too, is it just wasn't the Frank and Brian and Vesha show. We did have some help from the community, with enhancing and, fixing bugs. They were mostly Vesha's bugs. They weren't mine. Sorry, Vesha, but I'll take a few, thanks again to the community for jumping on board and helping us develop this solution.
We've had some great contributions, Frank. One was the localization to the UI.
Yes, and thank you, yes. Victor, for that one, right? So,
the AngularJS validation pieces as well. Some great stuff being added to the project.
Yep, and it's all benefit for the people who are actually using the solution, right? So it's a one common solution what we built together with the community, and it's open source, so it's free. Cool. Moving on the features and capabilities. Just more briefly going through this individual bits and pieces. Take it away, Frank.
Yeah. So one of the things, right, as Brian has mentioned, is, while working with some of our customers, and it was actually part of the joint development program, but, we gathered a lot of these use cases, from our existing customers and SharePoint Online, and a lot of them wanted self-service site creation. They didn't want their IT staff to, run PowerShell commandlets and manual intervention. They also wanted the capability. Some customers, hey, we want to implement a workflow to approve sites, and then some customers didn't want that. So the solution has the capability to auto-approve site requests as they're coming through. And that could be configured based upon your template. So if it's a finance site, for example, hey, we can have a workflow that will be triggered on that template. We want to be able to empower the end users to be able to create their sites and sub-sites and apply that consistent look and feel that is based upon their business requirements. We also have the capability to identify owners of the sites, right? A lot of customers wanted, hey, who owns my site? So we have that site directory concept that would help with reporting needs. We have that, that gets into the visibility of how SharePoint sites are actually being used, right, from a service standpoint. What templates are out there, what type of customizations are out there from a provisioning template standpoint. We also have the capability to classify our sites, right, so that you can determine, we use the HBI, MBI, LBI example from MSIT, and a lot of customers like that site classification standpoint. So we also gave that capability. Obviously, we always have notifications. People love notifications. So we have, based upon the engine if we will send out email notifications to those end users on approval or denial of the request. And those can be customized based upon, you know, if you had a custom workflow implemented, obviously you can also customize that as well. You know, we send out a notification that, hey, your site is created. You know, site provisioning is time consuming, right? It does take a little bit to provision a site. And based upon those customizations, like what lists and web parts, content types that you want to deploy, that could all tack on additional time. So we actually created, which is a best practice, is asynchronous processing. We call post site creation, right, where we apply our customizations and we'll send out an email notification. The solution also has a capability that, hey, if there is a problem, right, say the template is incorrect or you're having or experiencing a problem with SharePoint on-prem or, you know, timeouts in SharePoint Online, we also send out notifications to the administrators, your SharePoint admins, that, hey, something has occurred within the solution. And we just implemented some fixes that will address some of the timeouts that people have been reporting. There was a Yammer thread about that. So we did modify the code slightly to handle that scenario.
Hey, Frank.
Yeah, Brian.
I want to add something about site classification. So this capability has been, you know, for my customers, has been a huge hit because, you know, a lot of them are trying to deal with governance. They've got, you know, pressure from their security groups to implement more governance, and site classification has been one topic that's been discussed amongst many customers, but they haven't gotten around to doing it right. So, you know, this solution gives them that capability of implementing that, which is basically just reusing some of our PNP samples, and we've integrated it into the solution, right? But, you know, they can easily set their own classifications, their policies. But again, it's been a huge hit because it gets a lot of discussion going, and it helps some of the IT guys that really need to show some progress around governance, right? So, wanted to add that.
Yeah, no, that's great, because that gets into, you know, protecting your data, and putting that owner responsibility for that site lifecycle. When we talk about reduced maintenance here, reduced maintenance is from a customization standpoint. So we have, you know, in the past, right, with, you know, self-service site creation within the SharePoint product itself, it was great for just creating a site, but it didn't really customize the sites based upon, you know, the business units requirements. So leveraging the PNP engine to actually provision those artifacts, we can actually reduce that maintenance and operational costs from applying those customizations in a consistent way, right? And in a repeatable way. The other thing too is, you know, we can control, based upon the engine, that the PNP template, that template that determines what artifacts are applied to that site, is, you know, we can apply consistent branding and features and capabilities based upon the template, and that is the power of the PNP provisioning engine.
Yep, absolutely.
So, Vesa, help me here, right? You know, when we first started, we had how many solutions?
Obviously in the PNP, there's a lot of solutions and a lot of samples, and this is absolutely it's a good common question what we're getting nowadays, and especially after we released the PNP Partner Bank, is that, well, why do we have so many solutions in the PNP guidance around site provisioning? And it really comes down on a thinking that we want to have a simplistic samples, we want to have a medium samples, and then we want to have a more complex and a reference sample, which is really well explained on the following slide. So what we have is a random set of samples which are showing different aspects of the site provisioning, like there's a synchronous creation of a site collection without any additional complexity. Create a site collection, that's it.
Hey, Vesa, did you just say synchronous?
Asynchronous. That's a good point. Yes, absolutely. So asynchronous creation of a site collection without any customizations or templates. Then there's a sample which is showing how to take advantage of the PNP provisioning engine. So it's the same asynchronous sample, but it's then actually using a custom templating in an asynchronous way. Then we released the PNP Partner Pack a while back, which is more around, it's right now it's targeted to be a starter kit or a demo solution. And it's kind of there to show partners and customers what we can do using the PNP guidance. So it's a really combined effort for showing how to do responsive UI, how to do Azure AD-based authentication, how to do site provisioning. But it's relatively simple, and it doesn't have that many configuration options, but it's really well documented. So there's a setup script, and people are able to set it up to running in any tenant. And then we have the fellow, which we're going to talk about, or what we're talking about in this particular video recording, which is the provisioning UX app, which is the most comprehensive solution for enterprise customers, which has been developed based on the input from many of our enterprise customers, what we've been working on our day-to-day life. And it has more complex configuration options and capabilities like the multilingual support. So all of these kind of have a different meaning. And in PNP, what we want to do is not give all of the people just the most complex and highly architectured solution, which then a lot of the people wouldn't able to actually reuse. We want to give stepping stones. We want to have the middle complexity and then I wouldn't say uber complex solution, rather high configurable solutions as well, so that people can easily go through the steps to understand what we need to do for site collection provisioning or site provisioning in general within the using the adding model techniques.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to add to that, Vesa, so I've had customers that, you know, want to basically, they want that highly configurable option, then I've had others to say, you know, I need a provisioning solution. I need to show something right now. I don't have time to spend on configuring it, making all those decisions. I want to install it. I want to deploy it and brand it simple, you know, simple branding and be off and running with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And then that really comes down on choosing between the different solutions what we're having. And there will be more documentation on the options for those. But anyway, Frank, take it away on the, let's concentrate on the provisioning UX app and what is the solution, what we're going to show today.
Yeah. So, you know, here is the logical architecture of the application, right? So we have our SharePoint service, could be SharePoint Online, SharePoint on premises. We have our provider hosted add-in. Again, Angular JS implementation with a few little web API twists. We do have the capability, right, to store those artifacts, you know, that site request in a SharePoint list. If you don't want to use a SharePoint list, like for example, MSIT and a few other of our customers, they use other implementations, your favorite SQL database of choice. In our sample, we included Azure Document DB that could be configured, right? So I guess the point that I want to make here is that repository to store those requests can be totally configured to the data source of your choice. And if you wanted a workflow, you know, we can actually implement that workflow. Now, we don't have a sample workflow within our solution. A lot of customers, it's all based upon business requirements, but in interacting or in building out a workflow to support that site request approval can easily be done and added to the solution. Now, once we have that request within our data repository, we use our typical remote timer draw pattern. And what this is doing is monitoring that repository for requests that have been approved. And then once we do that, right, the job is actually the meat of the solution. This is the workhorse where it's going to provision that site for your end user and apply the necessary configuration items like your list, libraries, your branding, your logo that you need for your business requirements. And then we send out a email or a notification to those end users that, hey, congratulations, your site has now been provisioned. Go check it out.
Makes sense. Relatively kind of a typical flow on the things.
Yeah. Nothing really complex there, right?
True.
Yeah, and you know, as Frank mentioned, the remote timer job, that is your workhorse, right? That's your flow of everything you want to happen. Besides the provisioning, you've got assets and other things that you want to deploy. So that will, you can specify where these things reside for the job to access and then deploy out to your site. So, as your site's been provisioned, it can then go out and grab, other artifacts of that site, apply your branding, etc. So, the provisioning is based on the out-of-box site. Like it says here, usually team site or publishing site. And, we're not using web templates. We're not using sandbox solutions, right? We're leveraging the PNP provisioning engine, right, to create those sites and push those assets out and apply the configurations, right? And, again, the assets are uploaded from the engine using CSUM and Rust. One area of customization here that I've seen our customers do is not only do they want a site request repository, but they might want a site directory list, right, that they can extend and custom, build a UI for. And so one way to do that, as we mentioned, the common library, they would basically extend their solution in that common library, and you would modify your job to not only do the normal things we just talked about, right, the provisioning, applying the assets and branding, but then it could also say, hey, go create this site directory, right, and provision, whether that's a list or whatever it might be, and apply those site columns and everything else and create the list.
Yeah, and Brian, you made an interesting point, right, about leveraging the common library, right? It, one of the things that we recommend is if you need to add in your own implementation, right, of, site directory as an example, or you don't like our site requests list and its metadata, what we recommend is don't touch the common library. Extend the interfaces, and we'll show the project structure in a few minutes, but extend and implement those interfaces. So that means, you can add in your implementation as you see fit, your requirements. And when we update the common library, right, your solution, you wouldn't have to do any type of maintenance. Treat it, I know this is going to be a bad word, Vessel, you're not going to like this, right? Treat it like PNP Core, right, in a sense, right? It is a wrapper around the provisioning framework in PNP. So extend.
Absolutely.
Extend
absolutely.
There.
There was nothing controversial on that statement.
Yeah. It it's not PNP common, right? But it is, it is a way so that we can reduce the maintenance and the turn that you might have when we're updating some of the components. So like we add new features or, we fix a few of Frank's bugs, right? So.
Right, yeah. And, what I tell my customers is that, and I get questions, okay, where do I, what can I customize, I've got all these different components of the solution, right? And what I usually typically tell them is, okay, for things like the site directory example, right? You would, you know, customize common, right? You make that your own, and you customize the UX itself, right? But for the PMP core engine, right, I will tell them, you know, make sure you know you get the latest and greatest, and you know, use the NuGet packages that are available, right? And so I kind of try to show them where to draw the line as far as customization versus I always want to get the latest and greatest and not overwrite, you know, everything that I've customized.
Sounds kind of similar.
rather than copy pasting the code, use the code base and take advantages of evolvement and fixes in the code base, and then on a customize on top of it. Absolutely makes sense.
Yep.
But Frank, show us the pictures. How does the engine actually look like, or the implementation?
So what we have here, right, is, you know, we have, you know, the actual request. So we have like a dashboard that shows my completed request, my, you know, the state of that site request. And while you go through the provisioning wizard, it asks you a set of questions, right? You know, based upon your business requirements. And again, we took bits and pieces from all of our existing customers and came up with this solution. And as Brian has stated, right, we can actually implement different types of metadata that would be applied to your site. So if you didn't like, you know, function or division, that could be modified. The end result here is, and you know, you can see how great Frank's UX skills are, is, you know, we have the final output after the remote timer job or remote job has actually created that. And you can see, and we'll show you a site, right? You know, we add nice little banners, we change the logo. You know, we have our nice little MBI indicator of, you know, what is that site classification?
So quick question on the UI of the actual solution, not on the UI of the site collection, which is provisioned, because that's obviously dependent on the template that we use. But we can change the logos and languages on this one, right? So how does it, it's not fixed within the implementation?
You're absolutely right. So we actually support now, I think what, Brian, for the last few months, right, we added multilingual support to the site provisioning UX. We have English and Finnish, right, in honor of VESA, but you can easily make your own resource file, right, because we're using Angular Translate here. You can add in any different type of languages that you need very easily without recompiling the code.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's one of the great additions by one of our fantastic MVPs. He basically implemented into the UX app the JavaScript localization framework. It's the I18N framework. But yeah, it was a great addition. And like you said, Frank, you add your localization files.
It's the implementation was done by Victor Villain for that particular thing. But I think it's actually, yep. Frank, I need to correct you. In Finland, and Finnish is different than Sweden and Swedish. So I think in this case, it's actually Swedish.
Typical American VESA, really.
Yeah, exactly. Europeans, who knows?
Yep. We don't know what they're doing, but thanks for the correction.
Cool, but let's move on and let's have a look on this one in practice. So, how does it look from a code and the UI perspective in a browser?
So here's that dashboard. Okay. Hey, Brian, did you want to talk about this?
Yeah,
because so, this is you're the UX guy, right? I'm the middleware guy.
So this, you know, we call this a landing page, but it's really our entry point into the app, right? It's our default ASPX page. This is really a big talking, area with our customers because they're trying to figure out what they want to do with this page, right? All this page is really meant to do is show, you know, hey, we've got some different capabilities, you know, things we can, it's just an idea starter, right? And from here, you know, basically what it does is it will get your user info and then go back and it'll get all of your completed requests, approved requests, anything failed. So that's all this is really doing here. And then of course, this will launch by clicking that button there, launches our modal dialog, right? And again, this is all Angular based. We've got, our wizard controllers and we're using directives and all that good stuff, services, factories. But, this page here it's just a view, right? We're following, you know, an MVC pattern and, you know, each one of these views, you know, we got a owner responsibilities view, intended usage view, et cetera. And, you know, for example, on back on responsibilities, you know, we've got our verbiage there and in our different, you know, acceptance criteria, right, where some customers might have 7 or 8 things. You know, I've read this, I've done that. Very easy to add into the view and also include into your request that's submitted to the back end. And this is one point where I talked about, you know, customers saying, you know, hey, I want to be able to easily modify my UI. I want to change the text in one of my views, right? I want to add or remove certain things. And it's really just HTML, maybe some JavaScript, right? And it's republishing the application. The template selection, and I can let Frank elaborate on this, but this is basically pulling, you know, your templates that you define, whether they're on-prem, whether they're team sites, project sites, whatever they might be. These templates are defined in your template configuration, and that's where it's pulling your list from here.
Yep.
And these ones, just coming back on the kind of a question, so these are not actually site templates or web templates or site definitions, right?
Oh no, Vesa. Correct. You have taught us well. That you know, we start off with an out-of-the-box site template, and we customize and build on top of that, leveraging CSOM, right? Okay. And REST APIs to apply those customizations. So no sandbox, again, no web templates, no site templates, and definitely no site definitions, right? So
obviously the key reason for doing that is really the fact that if we would be using the feature framework or web templates, we would run into maintenance challenges and additional challenges in the future with the templates.
So. Exactly. So correct. When 16 comes around, right, well, which is out, right, you shouldn't have any problems, you know, with the upgrading your sites because we do best practices with customizations and which should allow for an easier upgrade experience.
Yeah, and in these template configurations, there is an attribute, right? So as you can see down at the bottom, you've got to enable external sharing. That is an attribute on the configuration of that template. So you can say external sharing is false if it's you know, an SPO team, an on-prem site, right? And so if you were to select the on-prem template, you would not see that enable external sharing option at the bottom. And what we've done here is we've kind of done a URL check. So this is basically an Angular directive and a service call that goes out. And as you type, you know, the first few characters, it's going out and validating whether that site is already in use or not, that URL. Of course, you can, you know, this whole view, what we call a details view, is probably the biggest one that the customers will customize because the metadata options that you see down here do not always apply to every customer, right? And so they may come back and say, well, I don't use region or division. I use some other piece of metadata, right? So That's where, you know, one area that they would extend or modify a view and make sure that, that the source of that data exists. And then we can also, in our settings, we can also apply a lot of, you know, a lot of default settings as well, like default language, default time zone. So that is configurable as well.
So what about this one? This is the this is actually people picker. So this is a provider hosted application, but it's associated to Office 365, right? So it's actually working in the right way.
Correct. In this implementation is using our PNP sample. So another scenario where another scenario where we're trying to leverage some building blocks, right? And so this is using the JSON version of the people picker, and
cool, because typically obviously when you're implementing a people picker in provider hosted, it's slightly more difficult to use, but in the PNP guidance we have that people picker component available and implemented together with the community for people to take advantage. So
correct. And we have a and that example is, you know, pure JavaScript. We have a couple, one or two extra AngularJS classes that we're using to kind of make that play a lot better with this UI.
Makes sense. So now that we go through the UI, we're setting all of these things, what's going to happen with the request? There's the confirmation. So that's kind of a summary page, and this is what we entered. And what's going to happen with this request then?
So once this request is saved, once I submit this request, it is stored in the repository, right? So if I refresh this,
hopefully I'm seeing something. Crossing fingers.
Yeah. Good old one. So actually, let's go back to the site here.
So, yeah, it's minimal download strategy, so it didn't update the page.
Yep. So, but one of the things, right, so in this example, in this configuration, we're using a SharePoint list as a repository to store those artifacts. And we create all these lists, and I'll show you that where that's at within the solution. But this is actually stored within the site request list itself. So you can see here that here's my site URL, and is it on-prem? This is how we know, right, if it's, you know, how do we provision? Because there is two different implementations for provisioning. Check out the code. But we have one for Office 365, and then we have one for on-premises build. Slight modification, but basically the same code.
So this is the kind of the default implementation of a repository is that it's a SharePoint list. We're storing that request in the SharePoint list, and then there's the remote time job, which comes here and checks that is the site ready for to be created. In your case, it seems to be that the provisioning status is automatically approved, right? So you don't have an approval workflow for this particular fellow.
No, we do not. And that is all based upon configuration as well. So if I did have a workflow or wanted an approval workflow for a given template, the status would change to new, right? So that the workflow can then pick up that item and then perform whatever logic that it you need. Right. And when the job is actually running, right, so what would happen is the job would actually change it to processing.
Cool. And then now I have to ask, why do we have the first item in the first row is site already exists in a URL, even though there's the URL checkup in the UI? Somebody would be thinking that as well.
Well, so that is me trying to be fancy, Vesa, and do my negative test. So what I did is I provisioned the site and then, you know, changed that.
Explains the exception, absolutely.
Yep. And many things can happen when you're provisioning, right? So this show will show if there is an exception that occurs. We actually tell you what is actually happened. Okay.
Yep, makes sense. Can we actually go to, let's go to the Visual Studio and let's have a look on the how is it actually built and or which are the main pieces of the solution.
Yep, so to get started, okay, I'm going to show you the setup folder, right? This setup folder, Vesa, please make fun. Okay. So right here, we have our setup scripts, which allows us to actually create those artifacts to support the application. When I mean artifacts, I'm talking about our site request list. We only have setup scripts for SharePoint to use SharePoint as a repository. So all those lists that I showed you, this is how you get those provisioned. We actually use Erwin's PowerShell commandlets to actually provision those artifacts. So,
And just to clarify, what is Erwin's PowerShell?
Erwin's PowerShell, sorry about that. It's the PMP PowerShell commandlets for that is, you know, if you want to use PowerShell to manage your environment, those are great commandlets to help you, which basically everything that's in PMP core actually is serviced within those PowerShell commandlets so that those IT pros can actually work and customize your sites and work and administer those sites without writing C# code, right?
Yep. Absolutely makes sense. So basically, if I pull down the solution, only thing what I need to do is run the PowerShell, and it's asking me the needed questions, or is there some additional steps?
Obviously you need the installer from the PMP commandlets, and it's only going to ask you three things: what is your destination site? Okay. And let's just show. It's going to ask for your credentials, right? We don't know who you are, so you have to ask that. And then that's it, right? So username, you know, your site URL and your username and password to actually interact with the site. And again, this actually works in, you know, SharePoint on-prem and in SharePoint online.
Yep. And just to add, Frank, the provisioning XML file, that's your configuration file that, you know, that defines your columns and your lists and everything that you want to basically set up to support the application. I mentioned earlier, not only creating a site request list, right, but creating a site directory list, right? So if I want that created, I would simply just go in and add to this, right, the fields that I want to create, whether they're new or whether I want to reuse them, and put in that definition for that site directory, right? And once I run my setup script, right, I will see my site directory out there as well.
Yeah,
makes sense. Not to be picky, but in the PowerShell, it's actually written in the future, but the dates aren't dates, so that's fine. Small typo on a year. Now, what else do we actually have on the solution? So we have the provisioning common, provisioning job.
The provisioning common, this is our common library. This is our, our PMP core-like functionality. This actually wraps many of the things that are in PMP core. It is not a replacement for PMP core. This is just so that the provisioning UX can perform its work. We use PMP core throughout the common library to actually go out and provision all of these artifacts. So this is only meant to be used by the job and the provisioning UX. So this is so that it knows what type of object, right? So, hey, I'm using a SharePoint list, or I'm using, SQL Azure, that it's going to do that intelligence for you. So it's meant to actually control that flow of the application.
Yep. And I can imagine that the both WebCharp and the WebUI are both using this common library, right?
Correct. So the job, in the job, you know.
That's quite simple, John.
Yeah. We have two lines, right? Site provisioning job, process site request, right? And basically, this could be hosted in Azure. This could also be hosted on premises. Because some of our customers don't have that luxury of being able to host in Azure for whatever reasons. So the interesting thing is, I could be running within an Azure website for the UX. I can have my job running in on-prem. You can intermingle components. So, it's actually an interesting concept that what we've done is, and to give the flexibility of where you want to host and what you actually want to provision. We do have some config, with this great power comes great responsibility, right? And so we do have some configuration settings. So here, if I'm running in Azure, we can actually host these and put this configuration within Azure. But if you're hosted on-prem, right, then we don't have that capability to store these configuration settings. So we have to default back to the typical .config files. We broke it up to be a little bit more easier to work with so that you know which files to go to. So app settings, this is where we store our client IDs and secrets and various information to point to our sites. We also have the provisioning settings. Now, we do have documentation on this. I'll be honest, we have to do a little bit better. So we are actually working that. The feedback is, hey, what's this configuration file? So if I come in here, the repository manager, yep, Vesa, make fun, is this controls where I want to go. So you remember earlier where we were talking about common, okay? If you don't like our site request fields, you actually implement an interface, and now underneath the covers, we're doing reflection, right, to actually point out. So you would create your own assembly. You point it to the type that you want to instantiate, and you give it the assembly name. And then that is so that you can plug in things at will and customize based upon your needs.
Makes a lot of sense. So just out of curiosity, the basic setup, if you're happy with whatever is there, you don't need to change that, right?
You do not need to change anything.
Correct.
At all. Now, the one thing, though, that I will say, if you are hosting in Azure, there is something that you have to do, okay? And we actually provided a little snippet in our config file here. Oh, make fun. Right here. I think, Vesa, you actually pointed this out to the community not too long ago. So when you're running an Azure web job, the resource files that are stored will actually be hosted in the web side of in Azure. So where the provision UX is, right?
So you cannot just relatively pinpoint from a web job to a relative file location because it's not actually there. The files are located in a different location.
Yeah.
Because the process is executed in a different kind of a folder in a context.
Yep. Now that that would have to change. Now, we also have various other configuration files. So if you wanted to store in Azure, storage, you can do that too. We all have that documented, out in our README file and within the configuration file so that you can help get started.
Makes sense. And just,
yeah.
So looking into the other things, so I can see that that's just a provider-hosted application, isn't it? So that's the app file.
Boring. Yep. You know. Yeah. Here's
and that's
our
the
meat.
UI part. Yeah, that's almost where the meat is. That's where the AngularJS AngularJS implementation is stored.
Exactly. And so we have a lot of our this is where all of our Angular scripts are. We have our common scripts in here. One of the things, you know, so we talked about multilingual. It's not very clear. But it is the I18N folder. So this is what we were talking about earlier, right? So, you know, you can use this file to actually create different locales. Or, you know, if you don't like what we say about, you know, site provisioning, right? This should, you know, I want to change that text of that field. I want to call it, you know, VESA's site provisioning, right? We can actually change these files without actually going in and tweaking the HTML or the Angular, right? So we try to incorporate a lot of functionality that, you know, if you wanted to change something, you don't have to recompile, right? So that was the goal. Sense.
Well, yeah, you need to redeploy.
Well, one of the goals.
But anyway. Cool.
Right.
I think we're way past the normal timings of this webcast, so I think it's time to wrap up quickly. So on the slide, on the demo slide, if we go back on the demo slide, and there we go. And yeah, I know Frank is always having small issues with this laptop, but that's the reason why I make fun out of him using the Zoom it.
I still haven't learned that too well, right? I'm used to my Mac, right? So, but yeah.
don't mention that. Come on. Just kidding. So the address for the provisioning UX app is there. So it's in the GitHub Dolphus Dev BNP. It's in the main BNP repo underneath solutions and provisioning UX app. When you pull down the BNP, go get that one. And you can then easily start expanding that. Pull requests are more than welcome, right, guys? And all the feedback as well.
Yes, and, you know, if, you know, please let us know, post an issue, post in the PNP Yammer group. You know, if you have any questions, you know, we're here to help you. Feedback is always important. So if there's something that you don't like, or you're questioning, Frank, why do we have so many interfaces, feel free to reach out. And
you're quoting me, right?
But yeah, so yeah, go out, check it out, and like to thank everybody for listening to us, and you know, hopefully you'll love this solution.
So. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Any final words from your side, Brian, based on your expertise on this one as well?
No, not really. I mean, I've a lot of customers using this and customizing it, and I've heard nothing but great feedback from it. And everybody they demo it to has just been absolutely impressed with it. So, you know, and that's thanks to everybody, right? We've got a lot of contributions from the community, and it's always improving. So.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Let's continue building this together as the most configurable solution in the future as well in the PNP. But anyway, thank you guys for the presentation and really, really great presentation going through the individual things. Hopefully everybody who's watching the video finding this interesting and helpful, and please go onto the BNP pages and sites to pull down what we have and have a look on and start reusing. That's really the main idea of the BNP. But thank you guys. Thank you guys for this one, and we'll be again back with a new session at some point.
Yep. Sharing is caring.
Sharing is caring. Right. Thank you, Frank. Cheers.
Thank you, everybody.
Cheers, guys.